passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice-cold reward. Medella, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter, and Medella is your reward. Medella, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
2-2 pitch.
Everybody, JJ Cooper, Kyle Glazer here, another Baseball America playoff podcast presented by MyBookie. And we are here to talk about a day in which we now have a whole lot of knowing what's going to happen for the LCS. We still have a series out there, thankfully. We thankfully still will get a deciding game five, which thumbs up on that because I think we all could enjoy that. But we have another fun day of baseball to discuss. We're going to talk about openers. We're going to talk about Kyle Wright. We're going to talk about the team that pretty much everyone loves to hate, who's advancing to the LCS. We're going to talk about all that today. But we're going to start off, Kyle. We have now seen a multitude of teams, three, I guess, multitude debate. Four if you count the Padres, but the Padres kind of don't have anyone else to go to. But three teams go to openers, and then I hand it off to someone else to pitch the bulk innings, as the Rays, who invented this, kind of have done this. The starter and then the bulk inning guy. And I don't think you're a fan of this.
I think
explain.
Yeah. So first of all, I think we have to review what happened yesterday to talk through it, to see just This is just something that sets teams back more often than not. And any perceived platoon advantages are wiped out just because you're putting an inferior pitcher on the mound in the early innings and falling behind, and getting an early lead is so critical. It changes the entire dynamic of the game. I actually want to start with the Rays and Yankees. I talked about this in the podcast yesterday that, well, yes, the Rays had invented the opener and they were the organization most comfortable with it. They hadn't used it a ton this year. Ryan Yarbrough, yesterday on the podcast, I said 10 of his 11 starts, he had started traditionally. It's actually 9 of 11. And Ryan Thompson, who they went with as an opener, they'd only used him in that role once in 25 appearances this year. So what happens yesterday? They open up with Thompson. It's ugly. Inning in 2/3, gives up a pair of runs, needs 44 pitches. You have to bring Yarbrough in, and he ends up facing Aaron Judge anyway. So the only thing that you did, you know, you're trying to line Yarbrough up against the favorable part of the lineup, but nothing really changed. All that changed was he ended up facing DJ LeMahieu one less time. He ended up having to open up against the number two hitter in their order. I mean, Ryan Yarbrough went five innings, gave up two runs. Start with that. Instead, he comes in falling Thompson, who gave up two runs. It sets the Rays back. They're playing catch up all game, and they end up losing. Start with Yarbrough going five innings, giving up two runs. Again, he started against the top of the lineup pretty much anyway. You're going to be in a better position to win. And then we go to the Dodgers. Look, Julio Urias has been very good all year. He has had first inning struggles. There is no two ways about it. But even with those, he has been an effective pitcher for the most part for the entire year. They did this with him once as a bulk guy, and they lost the game because their opener that day, Joe Kelly, gave up three runs in the first inning. So again, in this situation, you put yourself back, you put yourself behind. But Dustin May is a really good pitcher. They went to him on short rest. They decided to start with him. Fine, whatever. He's a starter. But you should go to Urias then immediately. What you then do is you put in Adam Kolarik, who, look, he's a very good lefty specialist. He's not good at all against right-handers. What happens? You bring him in. He gives up back-to-back hits to open the inning. you end up having to intentionally walk Will Myers because he's just not good against right-handed hitters. One of the singles he gave up was to Tommy Pham. And yes, the ball four call to Jake Cronenworth was probably a strike. The run that scored came in on a weak chopper, but the bases shouldn't have been loaded in the first place. If you have Julio Urias in then, you're in a better position moving forward. And again, they ended up having to bring Urias in to face Tatis, who, the way the Padres do their lineups against left-handed pitching, Tatis would have been the leadoff hitter. So Urias ends up facing the guys he pretty much would have faced anyway in almost the exact same order. There might have been some changes at the bottom, but for the most part, it didn't do anything. He ends up starting where he would have started anyway. So I just go back to teams putting inferior pitchers on the mound, falling behind. In the Dodgers' case, their offense is good enough to overcome their mistakes, especially against a wounded pitching staff like the Padres. But in each case, the Rays and the Dodgers put themselves behind early to do this, and it's not worth it. You have to put your best pitcher on the mound. And I think sometimes in constantly seeking the platoon advantage early, you overlook the fact that an inferior pitcher's on the mound, and that's going to put you behind every time, as we saw it do yesterday.
Not every time. You're getting it absolute.
In the postseason, we have seen it happen 3 out of 3 times. The offense,
but that doesn't mean it'll happen every time. That's where I'm sorry. I'm a stickler on language. It's a higher probability, you're saying.
That's fair. It is a higher probability, and it's one that when you, especially in the Dodgers' case, when you have healthy, effective starters, you don't have to do it. It's a risk that's not worth it and ultimately puts your team in a worse position to win the game. And it's just not smart.
I don't disagree with a lot of what you're saying there. I have no understanding of why the Dodgers did it, because the Dodgers are not a team that are trying to piece this together. The Dodgers had an abundance of options. They could have just said, here, Julio Urias, here's the ball. Go out and give us the 5 innings that he gave them, and they'd have been in great shape. They could have said to Tony Gonsolin, here, Tony, here's the ball. Go out and basically dominate. And they have pitchers to do that. I at the same time, I will also note that I would say that in pretty much every one of these games that we've seen the opener, I don't know if it really, at the end of the day, it would not have mattered. I do not think it would have mattered in the Rays-Yankees game whether they have handed the ball to Yarbrough to start the game or not. And I point that out because, as you noted, Yarbrough pitched well, but he gave up 2 runs in 5 innings. Well, Jordan Montgomery pitched better, and the Rays scored 1 run on 3 hits in the entirety of the game. So whether it did not work for them, although, as you'd also noted, the Rays are the team that does this more than anyone. It did not work for them. And I don't know why they thought that they wanted to try to get 2 innings out of Thompson rather than an inning, exactly what you said, an inning where the starter comes in against kind of more the bottom of the lineup. And then you basically, yes, he's going to still face everyone the same amount of time, but he starts that first inning with a little bit of a weaker, part of the lineup to face. But at the end of the day, it didn't work. I don't know why they brought Kolarik in either. I agree with you. But if they'd have just said Dustin May and then handed it over to Urias instead of going Urias and handing it over to May, same difference for them. And May and Urias both pitched really well. So it's one of those things where it was too cute by a half to me. At the same time, and you touched on it, kind of we'll start with the finale. Julio Urias in that game, really good. I mean, really impressive. And this just stand kind of as a good reminder of just the utter depth. There are very few teams that we've seen in the postseason. Probably they're the only one who you say, if you got to a game five, and they did get to a game five, but if they got to a game five and they hadn't used all their pitchers yet, they have a starting pitcher where you're like, do you really want to go Walker Buehler on short rest? Or would you prefer to use their number five starter? Because again, the number five starter we're talking about would be Dustin May, Julio Urias, or Tony Gonsolin if they use them more traditionally.
100%. And I think that's the biggest advantage they're going to have as we move into these the 7-game series portion of the postseason. And again, it just comes down to, okay, how are they going to use these guys? If they do what they did now in the next series, well, then you've burned using May and Urias And it kind of, you know, again, you start losing the advantages you have having five healthy starters. However, there's no question they're equipped to do really, really well. Urias pitched a lot better toward the end of the season, and he pitched pretty well most of the year. He'd had a couple outings where his command wasn't sharp, but you know, we saw his last two outings were pretty good. And September as a whole, he had a sub-3 ERA, held opponents under a 200 average. I mean, he's a really good pitcher. Tony Gonsolin, really, really good pitcher. And that offense, we've talked about this offense, is good enough. They can make up for any strategic blunders pitching-wise. And that's something that's going to bail the Dodgers out. We've talked a little bit about some of the issues that they've had in the past with managing their pitching staff in the postseason. But they've had some really good offenses. This is the best one they've ever had. And that's what depth and talent can do for you. It can overcome mistakes, whether that's on the field or strategic. This is just an absolutely loaded team. We've talked about it from day one. This is the best team in baseball, and they are a clear tier ahead of every other team. This is their World Series to lose. I've said it a lot. I'm going to say it again. I think that the only team that can beat the Dodgers is the Dodgers. And even when they do some things that are more hurtful than helpful, they're so good they can win anyway. And we saw that last night. Now they're going to go face a very good Braves team. But again, the Dodgers are just on a clear tier above everyone else. And no matter who they face in the World Series, whether it's the Astros, the Rays, or the Yankees, they're going to be favored as well. This is the team that should win this World Series, no doubt.
I want to break that. I want to unpack that a little bit because that'll take us into our second series of the day. Before we do that, though, we have a quick message.
It's fall, and at MyBookie, that can mean only one thing. It's winning season. Winning season means doubling your first deposit. Winning season means free bets, super contests, Survivor, and more. At MyBookie, winning season is all about your chance to win big. You can bet the Major League Baseball playoffs. You can bet the NBA playoffs. UFC, NFL, college football. The craziest sports fall of your lifetime is here. It's simple. Make your picks. Win big. Collect your cash. Invest in your intuition. Select from hundreds of futures bets where you can bet games in real time with MyBookie's live betting. Put that big brain of yours to good use. Use promo code BASEBALLAMERICA. That's one word, BASEBALLAMERICA, and double your first deposit. New players get up to $1,000 in free play, designed to add more excitement to the sports you love and the games you bet. Thousands of cross sports wagers, props, and parlays await. Sign up now to bet with the best and celebrate your victory. Your winning season begins today, only at MyBookie.
And we're back. So, Kyle, I agree with you, the Dodgers are a favorite. At the same time, okay, Braves also advanced yesterday. They finish off, they really had very few issues finishing off the Marlins. Their pitching staff so far has been one of the, absolutely one of the stories of the postseason. They have a sub-1 ERA. Now, you know, for the first five games of the playoffs, now again, playoffs are very different now. We have wild card rounds. The teams that they're being compared to, the other teams who have done this, are teams that did this in the turn of the 20th century that were doing this where you were playing, you know, best of four World Series and you're done. So with that, you know, their pitching staff's been on a very high level. Their lineup's really good. I do think when you say like the Dodgers, the only team that can stop themselves, I give the Dodgers like, it's like, I think they're the favorite in this NLCS, but with the way that this Braves team's lineup is, and the way that they're pitching, I want to talk about Kyle Wright because key moment for them is that they got this kind of outing from someone other than Max Fried and Ian Anderson. I think it's like 55-45. I mean, I don't think it's something where the Dodgers are an overwhelming favorite in this NLCS. I think that they are a favorite, but it's a slight favorite. And the key thing I'll say there is that when I'm looking at this lineup versus lineup, I think the Braves lineup is better than the Dodgers lineup. When I look at this starting pitching staff versus starting pitching staff, Dodgers clearly have a better starting pitching staff. Although the front end of this Braves staff makes it not as overwhelming as an advantage as it would be against most teams. Bullpen versus bullpen, I'll give the Braves the advantage. It's deeper. And I think that they have more guys who you want to have pitching in the seventh and eighth and ninth of key games. So I think the Dodgers are the favorite here, but before we go to the Braves-Marlins game, I think it's pretty close though to me.
So the offenses this year were very, very close. They were 1-2 in the National League in runs, home runs, and OPS. The Dodgers had a slight edge in runs. They led in home runs, and the Braves had the edge in OPS. These offenses are very, very even. I think the Dodgers, you know, they have a couple more guys they can turn to, so maybe it's a little deeper. If you wanted to tell me you prefer the Braves, that's fine. I think there's an argument for that. I personally prefer the Dodgers, but either way, it's 1-2, and these are very, very good teams. What I mean by that is, I want to get to Kyle Wright because I talked about it last night. What he went out and did yesterday was huge for them and what it means moving forward, how real of a contender they are to get to the World Series. I think the Dodgers starting staff, you match up really, really well. Buehler versus Fried, Kershaw versus Anderson. I mean, if you don't argue it's a draw, that's fine. I don't think there's an argument it's a Braves advantage.
No.
Once you move into games 3, 4, 5, I think the Dodgers have a heavy advantage. Again, provided they use Gonsolin, May, and Urias 3, 4, 5 and don't outthink themselves. That's where there's an advantage here that to me is just so enormous that it should be enough to make them, in my mind, 65-35 favorites to win the series. And that's not about anything wrong with the Braves in the sense of, yes, the back of the rotation is weaker, but the Dodgers are such a juggernaut that I just think that they have an opportunity to really pull ahead and take advantage of whatever weaknesses the Braves show, because the Dodgers are just that good and that talented. You know, but the bullpen, the Dodgers bullpen, there's some questions at the back of the game, but it's been a pretty good bullpen this year. And we've seen, you know, Blake Treinen and Jake McGee have closing experience. They're good relievers. You know, Gratterall has not missed bats, but he's held teams down for the most part, ERA-wise. You have options. So for me, it's that starting pitching edge. If the Dodgers use it wisely, that is an advantage that will help them win this series.
But no one uses five starters. No one uses five starters. I know that it is going to be, you know, like we don't have the, it's not a normal, you know, a normal LCS that way. But do you think they're going to use five starters? I guess is the first way I should ask.
They need to use four. And I think what we've seen, so Dustin May has a platoon split issue, and that's why we started to see them use some kind of these bulk inning roles. But if they go Buehler game one, Kershaw game two, Gonsolin, Urias games 3 and 4, and they use May as a bulk guy, especially given Buehler is still working his way back from blister issues and has only gone 4 innings his first 2 starts, if they do that, they're fine. If they line it up that way, they're fine. But if they start burning May and Urias in the same game or May and Gonsolin in the same game, that's where they start shortchanging themselves and the advantage disappears. And that, to me, is the opening the Braves can take to win this series.
But my point being there is having a better number five starter, we just said, like, they're not going to use that. So we're really talking about the advantage is that they have a number four starter and the Braves do not. Like, that's where in this series is. And again, the other thing I'll say that's probably pretty important in this is for both teams, but especially for the Braves, is the Braves sweeping where they don't face a situation where they're inclined to go back to Max Fried on short rest in the division round is important, because now if they have to do so, you know, in the LCS, they're not having to do this. It's not something where they're doing this to a guy who's had to do this multiple times. He's going to be plenty rested. Also, I think the other key thing for them, again, of winning this as quickly as they did, I do think that the Braves bullpen depth, the bullpens of this series are going to throw probably 35-40% of all the innings. I mean, that's just kind of normal, especially as you've noted, Buehler is not a guy who's right now going 7 innings in an outing. With that being the case, I do think that the Braves bullpen advantage is significant. Now, but that'll circle back to what happened yesterday, which is the other key thing to me about the Braves is Kyle Wright went out. And he actually, statistically, as far as runs, not other parts of it, but as far as runs, he outperformed. He went an out more than Ian Anderson, gave them another shutout start. But I think the key thing is that we saw yesterday, to me, what you kind of can hope that Kyle Wright can be. And what I mean by that is that the difference between watching an Ian Anderson start, Ian Anderson's a better pitcher than Kyle Wright. I think we both could agree on that. Ian Anderson can go out there and he can have innings. He could have
multiple inning stretches where every pitch, almost every pitch, is where he wants it to be. He's in control of his delivery. He's mixing pitches. It's just rolling for him. That's not Kyle Wright. Kyle Wright's pure stuff is every bit as good as Ian Anderson's, like if you grade out the pitches to me. But the difference is that Kyle Wright is going to have his command, his control, his body control of his delivery is not at Ian Anderson's level. And so even in an outing like yesterday, where Kyle Wright was as good as he's been this year, he still had pitches. Like he had a fastball late in that outing where Travis d'Arnaud jumps out of his crouch and basically spears it because it just completely got away from Kyle Wright. He had stretches in that game where he lost the feel for his delivery, lost the feel for his breaking ball for a batter or two. He had some traffic. The key thing for Kyle Wright, the thing that he did very well at the end of September, and the key thing that he did very, very well against the Marlins to me, is his damage control has started to catch up to where it needs to be, which is early in the season and in previous seasons for Kyle Wright. Kyle Wright would have innings where you're like, this is the Kyle Wright you want to see. The fastball's nasty. He's locating his breaking ball. Hitters don't have a whole lot of chance. But what would always happen is he'd have that inning where the delivery would get out of sync. All of a sudden, he gives up a hit. He walks the next guy. He may hit a guy, whatever. And all of a sudden, you're looking at it, it's like, okay, Kyle Wright's in trouble here. And his damage control always was an issue. He couldn't get that delivery back together, get in sync, feel, regain that confidence in his breaking ball or locate his fastball as he needed to. And so, boom, he's rolling along, and all of a sudden it's a four-run inning, and Kyle Wright's walking off at the mound at the third after three with an ERA of the game that's like, you know, eight. Well, what he did yesterday to me, and he did this again at the end of the season, he was starting to do this. He did this very well in that win against the Nationals where he went, matched up against Max Scherzer. When he gets in trouble, he's starting to figure out the travel, the journey of a young pitcher. He's starting to figure out, step off the mound, regain myself, rediscover that feel for whatever pitch it is that I need at this time. And yes, I'm absolutely going to have probably two pitches an inning, every inning, where I flew open, whether I, you know, I wandered out, whatever it is for him, that he loses it. He's regaining it quicker now. And the key thing about it is that Kyle Wright's stuff is good enough that if he can just do that, he doesn't have to be their number one. He doesn't have to be their number two. Their Braves are going to be in the great shape next year. He doesn't, if Soroka comes back, he's their number four. And to me, he's that perfect for a good team. He's that guy. It's Edison Volquez when Edison Volquez was good. Like that seems like I'm damning with faint praise, but do remember, like Edison Volquez is a guy who at his best was really good. Edison Volquez, again, Kyle Wright's a little like the highs are not as high and the lows are not as low as Edison Volquez. But Edison Volquez was a guy, I think I've heard you say it, like, Edison Volquez goes out there in his prime and you're like the first inning, you're going, okay, we're going to see a no-hitter tonight or we're going to see a guy who doesn't make it out of the second. Edison Volquez, Ubaldo Jimenez, guys like that where it's like at their best, they're dominating and at their worst, they're erratic because the control command's just not there. That's to me, Kyle Wright. The encouraging thing about Kyle Wright is that watching him, because he had traffic early in that game. That game is a game that could have gotten away from him. He's starting to figure out how, you know, he's moved on the rubber. I love the, you know, I love where guys set up on the rubber. He's moved on the rubber, but more than that, he's starting to, the periods of inconsistency have turned from it's 10 pitches in a row to three, and three, four, five. He can handle that. His stuff's good enough. He just can't let it be, oh, okay, every game there's going to be that one inning where he utterly falls apart. I'm more of a Kyle Wright believer, always have been, than you. As someone who's been more of the Kyle Wright skeptic, what did you see from that game?
Well, I thought the biggest thing, the moment that to me represented the turning point, was that third inning. So the Braves go out in the top of the inning, get four runs. They give Kyle Wright a lead, comes back out. He immediately hits John Birdie with a pitch and gives up a single to Corey Dickerson. This is a critical moment. Your team just gave you a lead. You need to go out and deliver a shutout inning. Two guys are on. What's he going to do? This is exactly where it could have spiraled out of control. Comes back, strikes out Jesus Aguilar swinging. You know, it was as a long at bat too, seven pitch at bat, got him swinging through a curveball. Goes back out. Brian Anderson blows him away on three pitches. That was so huge for him to come back right there. Now, he walked Garrett Cooper on four pitches to load the bases up. It's definitely a little scary. Comes back.
Oh, high wire act to the Kyle Wright experience.
Falls behind Jazz Chisholm and gets out of it, gets a grounder. To me, that third inning was the defining moment for Kyle Wright. Again, your team goes out and gives you four runs. You've got to come back with a shutdown inning. He opens up by hitting the guy, giving up a single. For him to come back and strike out two guys in the middle of the Marlins order to get himself back into it, and then rebound from walking the bases loaded, I thought that was just such a huge moment for him and a huge moment for the Braves. After that, it was all gravy. Braves come back out in the top of the inning, give him another run. And from there, it's just on cruise control for the most part. If Kyle Wright, the step forward he took yesterday in that third inning and held through the rest of the game, that makes the Braves a legitimate contender to go to the NLC, to the World Series, excuse me. Now, again, I think the Dodgers are the better team. And I went back and looked the bullpen numbers. The Dodgers bullpen actually outperformed the Braves this year by a good chunk. Their ERA is 2.74, Braves 3.50. Two of the best five bullpens in baseball, but the Dodgers had a three-quarters of a run advantage.
Right, and the pushback I'll give on that is that, and again, this is tough to do. I love for us to compile, and maybe it's a fun one for us to put together, is like, okay, let's compile the guys who are actually pitching, you know, who are still on the roster. The Braves used 28 pitchers this year. That's and fair. So, you know, some of those guys like, you know, are not on that road, on that roster where it's like, okay, I don't know if that guy's, you know, should be part of the calculations or not.
That's but, fair. Yeah. But going back to Wright, this to me, the way he responded in that third inning and the way he pitched yesterday, I talked about on the podcast before the day, this was going to be the defining moment of, okay, can the Braves win a seven-game series? We now know that the answer is yes, as long as Kyle Wright pitches like he did. They still need a fourth starter to, you know, step up and deliver. But this was as encouraging a win for the Braves. Because if they'd won, but it was, you know, 7-5 and Wright had gone out and given up, you know, four runs in that third and they had to burn through the bullpen again, that would have been the red flag that said, hey, you know, good win, but y'all aren't beating the Dodgers. Now you say, okay, they have a shot. Are they going to be favored? No. But the way this played out was perfect for the Braves, and they're in the best position they can be heading into this NLCS.
They are in a – and again, and the other thing that we should note here before moving on to the AL is this is also very significant for the Braves overall because, again, this is – the Braves have been a very good regular season team. I mean, that's kind of the story of the Braves, but the Braves have been a very good regular season team for several years, but they hadn't, their postseason history in the 21st century has been pretty awful. They're rolling right now. This is, if you add it up, the five wins they already have is a lot better than a number of these series that, you know, that this is a team playing good baseball at the key time of year it needs to play it. And it makes for what should be a very interesting NLCS. And again, against a juggernaut Dodgers team, it's good to have a team in this series against them who you plausibly, nothing against the Marlins, but if the Marlins had beat the Braves, and we've been talking about Dodgers versus Marlins in this series with that Marlins lineup, I would have really like been shaking my head like, okay, crazier things have happened. But man, it's hard to see how the Marlins are going to beat the Dodgers. I can absolutely see a team with Ronald Acuña, Freddie Freeman, Ozzie Albies, Marcell Ozuna, and by the way, the Travis d'Arnaud, you know, like Mr. October Travis d'Arnaud, you know, which guys get hot. He's having an amazing run here. I can see them beating him, which is good if you're a baseball fan that there's a really compelling NLCS, not a, oh, you know, this is a speed bump along the way for the Dodgers.
100%. This is going to be a really, really good series. These are the two best teams in the National League. We've seen that most of the year. This was my pick for what the NLCS would be back in February. I am very excited. I think this has a chance to be the best playoff series we have, as exciting as Padres-Dodgers was in terms of game two, it was still a three-game sweep. You know, Padres-Cardinals was very exciting in the wild card round, but the Braves and Dodgers, these are the two best teams in the National League for my money. These are the two teams that a lot of people thought would be here, and these are the two teams that are rolling the most right now and playing the best baseball in the National League. I'm really excited for this. I think this is going to be a great series. I tweeted it out last night. I'm really, really excited for this one.
So that we slide over to the AL, and we do know one of our two teams in the ALCS, the Astros. Pummel, bully, you know, pick your verb. You know, the A's 11-6. Power. You know, pretty much almost every game of the series is like, hey, so an Astro hit two home runs. This time it was Mickey Brantley who did it. Carlos Correa hits another one.
Michael Brantley.
Yes, thank you. Mickey Brantley. Man, but the time of staying up to watch these games must be wearing on me. Mickey Brantley's career ended a little while ago, but Michael Brantley with two home runs. Carlos Correa's also had a two home run game. George Springer's also had a two run, home run game. And basically this game, Zach Greinke guts out 4 2/3, but I think a key thing again is Christian Javier was really excellent. Huge. And the Astros bullpen was good enough. But the big thing is this Astros lineup is rolling. And yes, I know what the regular season records were. I know Matt Chapman's hurt. Watching this series, having the history of the last 3, 4, 5 years kind of in your head, it's hard for me watching this series to say, you know what? I mean, clearly the A's were the better team. The Astros just won this. It really felt like to me that the Astros were just, they felt like the better team in this series, even if their regular season record in a 60-game season showed nothing of the sort. The A's were clearly the better team over the regular season.
The Astros' best players showed up and raked. It's as simple as that. George Springer, Jose Altuve, Michael Brantley, Alex Bregman, Carlos Correa. These are studs. These are all-stars. These are franchise-caliber talent. And Kyle Tucker, someone that a lot of people think will become a franchise-caliber talent, and had a really, really good first full season. The top six in that lineup are star-caliber players, either established stars or soon-to-be stars. And they performed like it. And when your best players are that talented and they're clicking, you're going to be very, very, very difficult to beat. So much of this season, a lot of these guys were not clicking. We see so often during a normal season, hey, you know, guys get off to, you know, a bit of a slow start, April and May, June rolls around, they make an adjustment, they start heating up. Well, that's what's happening now. I mean, these guys had a rough 2 months, and then, you know, the equivalent of June's rolling around. It's like, ooh, okay, we found it. We're rolling. And this just happens to be during the postseason for them. If these top six hitters continue to hit like they have, this is a very, very dangerous team. We still need to see what this pitching staff looks like. Again, Greinke had a sore arm. He wasn't announced as a starter until yesterday morning after we'd recorded our podcast. You know, 4 2/3, 5 hits, 4 runs. It wasn't great, but you know, using Christian Javier in this bulk relief role has worked out really well for them. That's helped them bridge the gap with their bullpen a little bit. You know, Ryan Pressly getting hit at the end of the game, it's not the most encouraging thing in the world, but
yeah, but he also came into a game that the lead was so big that
it was over. It was over. There's no question. The way this offense is rolling, they're going to be a tough out, whether they face the Rays or the Yankees, and then whoever they face in the World Series. If these top six hitters can hit like this and continue to, and we know they're capable of it, these are star players, this is going to be a very, very, very tough team to beat.
The other thing I'll say with that is yes, the A's were without Matt Chapman. I do want to note the Astros were without Jordan Alvarez basically for pretty much the entirety of the season. And I'm not saying Jordan Alvarez is Matt Chapman because he's not, but it is like we talk about how deep this lineup is. It would be even deeper if they had another utterly, you know, middle of the lineup bat in this lineup. So I look at this and say, you know, as much as I know that I'm fascinated, if there is a Yankees Astros ALCS, I will note that probably is about the only matchup out there possible where you will have kind of casual baseball fans saying I'm rooting for the Yankees because they're the good guys in this series. You know, again, let's just be, you know, let's just own it. Let's just acknowledge it, I guess I should say. The Astros are the team that everyone wants to hate. If you're not an Astros fan, they've earned that. There's a reason for that. But at the same time, man, I look at this team right now, even with losing Justin Verlander and Jordan Alvarez, two cornerstone type guys for them, here they are in the ALCS yet again.
Yeah, again, this is something where you just look at this A's pitching staff, which, you know, again, their starters have had some struggles, but, you know, for the most part, this was still a decent staff on the whole. I mean, the Astros touched them up for 46 hits and 29 earned runs in 35 innings. I mean, they did everything right. They just crushed them. And look, the Rays have a really good rotation. The Yankees, you know, they can open up with Cole and Tanaka. I mean, there's good pitchers ahead, but the Astros offense is rolling. And look, their pitching staff was not great this series. I mean, they had a 5.25 ERA, but the way their offense was rolling, it didn't matter. So this is a really dangerous lineup. We've known that. They're clicking into gear now, and it's going to be a very, very juicy series regardless. But yes, if it ends up being Astros Yankees, I mean, the storylines are going to go through the roof.
So that gives us we do have one game five. We only get one, but we do get one game five. We have Rays, Yankees, Gerrit Cole going to go against Tyler Glasnow tonight in a must win for both. I think there's a couple of stories from yesterday's game, but to me, probably the biggest one is he only went four innings, but Jordan Montgomery with a team that absolutely needed a starting pitcher to go out there and shove, that's what Jordan Montgomery did. He handed it off to the bullpen in a situation where they were in control of the game by the time he did that. And that's crucial because the Yankees had not gotten that in game two. We've already discussed that, but also not in game three, where they went with their number two starter, Masahiro Tanaka, who got beat up. And so for Jordan Montgomery to go out and do that in a game where the offseason is very long, if he doesn't, crucial for them and also encouraging for the Yankees overall, because they needed an outing like this.
Yeah, they had to have it. And I talked about Kyle Wright's third inning being kind of a turning point. Same thing with Jordan Montgomery. The Yankees went out, gave him two runs in the bottom of the second, comes back out the top of the third, and immediately bases loaded with one out. I mean, oh, and the middle of the order coming up, or I should say the 2-3 in the order, Brandon Lau and Randy Arozarena. I mean, this was a critical moment for Jordan Montgomery, for the Yankees. And he goes in and he gets two ground balls from Lau and Arozarena. You know, one run came home on the force out, but bases loaded, one out. He needed to make big pitches and he made them. And that to me was the turning point in the game. You know, fourth inning again, you know, the Rays threatened again. G-Man Choi had a leadoff single. Adames drew a two out walk, but again, he got the ground ball for the third out that he needed. He walked a little bit of a tightrope there those final two innings, but he made the big pitch when he needed to. And once he hands it off to the bullpen, that was a dominant performance. Five hitless innings, seven strikeouts, retired 15 of the 16 they faced. The Yankees have some gas they can throw at the end of games. When you can go Chad Green, Zach Britton, Aroldis Chapman, that's really, really scary if you're an opponent. And now they get exactly what they wanted, Gerrit Cole in game five. This series has had so many swings. The Yankees looked so good in game one. The Rays jumped on their mistake in game two. The Rays never trailed in games two or three. I mean, they were in complete control. The Yankees yesterday, again, Jordan Montgomery getting those big outs in the third and fourth to preserve the lead and hand the ball off to the bullpen, swung the momentum back the Yankees' way. I'm excited for game five tonight. I can see this going either way. Cole's going on 3 days rest. Glasnow's going on 2 days, and so they're obviously going to get him out relatively quickly, and I would assume they're going to go some sort of bulk situation with Snell maybe beginning in the third. We'll see what they do. But it's going to be a really, really tense, exciting game five, and I'm very much looking forward to it.
Yeah, I mean, that's one thing I do want to note here is Glasnow pitched five in game two. Not only pitched five, but, you know, pitched five innings and threw 93 pitches. Just using him to start the game, I get it. But at the same time, this is something, he's professional. I get that and all that. But at the same time, let me just make clear, if this was happening in the College World Series, we would be talking about, this is a little dicey to be going, you know, back so soon after 93 pitches. I don't know how much you can really expect out of him. Like, I think that there is some risk to this of how good of Tyler Glasnow are you going to get? Because this is not saying, hey, we're going to bump you up by a day off of your normal schedule. This is essentially taking your throw day and trying to make it into, can we get, I don't know, 6-9 outs out of you? And it may work out, but at the same time, there is some, the best way I put it is to me, Tyler Glasnow goes out to start this game. This is an all hands on deck situation. I'd have someone warming up almost from moment one, because if he doesn't have it, you don't have the time to have him try to work through that, because this is when I talk about, you know, we talk about putting guys in situations to succeed. To me, there is a lot of risk asking a guy to start a game who is coming back on really short rest.
There's no question. This is a huge, huge, huge risk. Again, especially when you consider, you know, you have Blake Snell who is on 3 days rest. Now, again, I go back to, it's going to be dependent on how they use him. We saw the Nationals do this a little bit where they use their starters on their throw day, but it was in the bullpen. It was in relief. Hey, you know, Patrick Corbin, Max Scherzer, you know, we need you to come, you know, throw the sixth or the seventh. And that's where, if the Rays felt like they wanted to do this to get the bulk innings, for me, it's okay, throw Snell out there, see if he can get you the first three or four. Because again, he's still on 3 days rest. It's short rest for him too, but see if he can get you three or four. You have the arms, and, you know, Nick Anderson, Diego Castillo give you, you know, 5-6. If you want to bring Glasnow in to pitch the eighth, if it's a critical matchup, go ahead. This is a huge risk. I think you can argue it's an unnecessary risk, but it's what the Rays have chosen. And at the end of the day, it's about players going out and performing. And I don't know what they're going to ask of Tyler Glasnow. I think trying to predict what the Rays are going to do is a fool's errand. If they say, just go get the first two outs, retire LeMahieu and Judge, then we'll bring Snell in to start with Aaron Hicks. Maybe if they try and get one inning out of him, two innings out of him, I would imagine the shorter the better, just given he's on 2 days rest. But I'm going to be very, very curious to see what they do and what their plan is.
It's going to be fascinating. Again, I'm just glad that we get a game five. I mean, that's kind of key. You know, I for one, I want baseball today. And for two, I want it to be, I always want there to be at least one. With the LCS, please have one of those series go to game seven, because game five is a best of five. Game sevens and a best of seven are the most enjoyable. Right now I'm having flashbacks to 2016 Cubs Indians World Series. As a fan of baseball, not, you know, we're in a weird situation. When you say who's my favorite team, it's like, it kind of varies, because I'm just rooting for good baseball. The do or die games are the best baseball. I hope we get the key thing also tonight is I hope we get something compelling. I really hope that we're not in a situation where someone jumps out to a 6-run lead in the first couple of innings. I'll still be watching to the end, hoping, because again, the crazy world now of baseball, you can see big comebacks, but let's have this be something where the go-ahead run for both teams is getting on base every now and then over the course of 7, 8, 9 innings, to where, again, I'm very excited. We have do or die baseball. That's always the best.
100%. This is what's fun about the postseason, you know, winner take all, backs against the wall, and see who shows up and plays postseason hero. I'm definitely looking forward to this. And this is why the Yankees got Gerrit Cole. This is the moment right here. And I'm looking forward to seeing how it all plays out.
We will be back to talk about that and to look ahead at the LCSs. We'll return on Monday with another. This is working out well for us. We're not having games on the weekend. We're not going to record podcasts on the weekend. Sorry, we do have limits. Doesn't matter right now. I mean, again, yes, we're not going to get that analysis of tonight's game five tomorrow morning, but we will analyze it on Monday. And again, like we had last weekend, you're not missing anything else, because, you know, the weekend is clear of baseball.
But we will have the ALCS starting on Sunday.
I apologize. You know, yeah. I apologize. We clearly don't edit this because I'm leaving this in to show my stupidity. I thought it started on Monday. That's really dumb on my part.
NLCS goes Monday. So the National League teams are going to be more well-rested than the American League teams going to a game five, at least the Yankees, Rays, and then having to start on Sunday. So that's another advantage for the Astros. They have an extra day of rest against whoever they're going to play.
That is kind of key, especially, again, the Astros are a team that needs that more than anyone, too, because, again, their starting rotation, a little less depth there. Because of, especially, we got to see how Zach Greinke can go. But okay, I'm the idiot there. I'll own it. You know, we'll leave it in there. We're not editing that. But for Kyle, I'm JJ here on the Baseball America Playoff Podcast presented by MyBookie. So long, everybody.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5hetide.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5hetide.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.